Springs. It's good to be back on the microphone. I just found out that I haven't recorded an episode in 3 months. And however, I do feel pretty good. Even though we are the least listened to podcast in all of the internet, we do have 200 downloads. So I'm pretty happy about that. My name is Stephen Cohen. I'm here with Goose the Engineer.
Yo. I don't have my own bumper music, so I have to just kind of make it up.
So you can ad lib bumper.
Yo.
That's not really bumper music. It's more like bumper acapella.
It's Goose. Cha-cha. That's all I got.
All right, Goose the Engineer. He's the only real entertaining part of this podcast.
Yep, we're back at it like a crack addict.
Where do you come up with this stuff?
The internet, where people aren't viewing your podcast.
No one's viewing my podcast, dude. They can only listen to it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an astoundingly good point.
Hey, what's for dinner today? Oh, that's right. You have nothing.
A gulp of wind.
Why didn't you bring any dinner, man?
Well, I actually started meal prepping. It's crazy.
All right, so you're prepping now.
Yeah. Yeah. I realized that I can't get my daily dose of nutrients from Chick-fil-A and Wendy's. So I decided to switch out for rice and salad.
I don't really know. I don't know where to go with that.
You could start your podcast. That could be an option.
Damn. All right. Yeah, actually, today we're going to do something a little different. But before I get into that, this episode I've entitled, Are We Responsible for Our Votes? And if any episode is going to do this, I'm going to lose friends. There are people who are never going to talk to me again if they listen to this podcast. But I think I've gotten beyond the point where I really care, because I'm going to tell it like it is, and people need to wake up. That's kind of the way I see it. People just need to wake up. But we are going to do something a little differently this time, because my dearly beloved complains all the time that all that she gets on the news is negative stories. And it's true. Because apparently, negative stories are really all that sell in this country, which really is a sad statement about our society in general. I don't know how we got to this point, or maybe it's just general human nature. But yeah, negativity sells. And if you have a news station that does nothing but positive stories, they'll be accused of subverting news. Well, I would argue that a news station that does nothing but publish or produce negative stories is also subverting the news. Because nothing is always all bad, just as nothing is always all good. But in sticking with the format, we're going to do some updates, and we're going to, of course, do the old climate change update. We had a very unique experience in global temperatures, and of course, this depends on what data set you read, which I have just learned, but September 2023, the monthly average temperature was the highest since 1979. Now, for those of you who have listened to this podcast, have said that I have predicted that global temperatures were decreasing, and global temperatures on a monthly basis have been decreasing since 2015. However, some of you may recall that I did say that we're at an apex of this solar cycle, the solar cycle being the number of sunspots, and that temperatures were going to warm a bit. Why they are this warm, that's something I can't explain, but I'm going to go through a couple of interesting bits of data for you. So there's a site called Berkeley Earth, and this is UC Berkeley puts out their own data set. And this is a really interesting data set because it shows, and you can find it at berkeleyearth.org, and it shows the September 2023 global temperatures massively leaped above everything else. There's from 1860, there's this gradual increase, and then September 2023, bam. There goes this huge temperature spike. Now, you know that's a completely bogus data set because we know in 2015 there was a pretty big El Nino. Just as we are in an El Nino right now, there was a pretty big El Nino in 2015. There was also a pretty big El Nino about 1990. I think it was about 1998, 1999. Those don't show up on this data set. They don't show up. It's just this regular oscillating pattern. And then, boom, there are the September 2023 temperature spikes. So you know that the Berkeley temperatures are completely bogus. The data set that I'm looking at now is University of Alabama, Huntsville. And they get their data from NOAA satellites. So even though there was this big spike in the September monthly global temperatures, that doesn't mean the Earth is actually warming, because you need to look at the moving average. For those of you who don't know, a moving average is basically, if you have a linear set of data, a moving average is an average of a certain period within that data set. So for example, if you have monthly data for 20 years, you might have a moving average that lasts for 24 months. And every 24-month period, you calculate a new average and you plot that. And usually that gets plotted in the middle of the period. So the moving average has not increased that much. Now, what I would expect, in the next few months, that temperatures are going to start decreasing. While we are at the apex of the solar cycle, we haven't really crossed the apex onto the decreasing leg of the cycle. So we're still 2024 still is probably going to be a relatively warm year. But it's really interesting how people just manipulate this data, which makes you wonder if global temperatures are such an important parameter, why don't we have any consensus on how to calculate temperature trends? We don't. People do it differently. People do it differently to suit their needs. So one might ask, well, how do I know University of Alabama Huntsville is right? Well, it's a good question, but at least they show certain El Nino spikes that do not show up in the other data set. It also shows the mid-70s, well, it shows that temperatures were cooler in the late 70s, early 80s, but unfortunately this data set doesn't go from the 50s, which would show the mid-1960s, 1970s decrease in temperatures. Pretty interesting. The other interesting thing, when I'm looking at the sunspot data, the actual spike in the number of sunspots at this point is higher than it was during the apex in the last cycle, which was around 2015. So we are getting a higher sunspot number. And for those of you who may recall, sunspots, the sunspot number correlates directly to the amount of solar radiation hitting the Earth. Higher the sunspots, the higher the sunspot number, the more solar radiation is hitting the Earth. So we're going to have a warmer period. So there's definitely a little spike in the sunspot number. It's pretty interesting stuff. The other thing you need to look at, ocean temperatures. What have ocean temperatures been doing? The reason why ocean temperatures are the most important feature of our climate is because the oceans are the biggest heat sink on Earth. 75% of the Earth's surface is water. Water has a higher specific heat than land. There is just so much more heat that gets stored in water than it does on land or in the air. And it's heat from land and it's heat from the oceans that heats the air. How do we know? Well, again, I think I've spoken about this previously, where you look at ocean breezes. Ocean breezes in the morning when the land is heating up, so the air rises over land, and over water it's cooler, so the air sinks and you create onshore ocean breezes. But at night, the land cools off quicker because it has a lower specific heat, and the ocean is warmer, so you have the heat rising over the ocean and then falling over land, so you get offshore ocean breezes. So I'm looking at on the climateforyou.com website, there's a bunch of ocean data. And there's one chart that basically breaks out ocean temperatures by depth. And basically from, I can't even see that, from 1,900 meters, from a depth of 1,900 meters to a depth of approximately 200 meters, in the recent years, the ocean temperatures have been decreasing. But in reality, when you look at the overall trend, it all kind of looks flat. All the curves kind of look flat. There have been increasing trends between 1,900 meters and, say, 400 meters? Yeah. Between 1,900 meters and 400 meters deep, it looks like there have been increasing trends in the past. It does not look like that those trends are going to continue, which is pretty interesting. And from 2.5 meters to, say, 200 meters, the curves look flat. It looks like there had been some increase, really slight increase in the past, but the curves generally look pretty flat. That's a telling sign. What the oceans do is really what the Earth is doing. So that is something to look at. If ocean temperatures are not increasing, then global air temperatures are not going to increase. It's that simple. At least that's my story. I could be wrong. But, you know, since no one seems to understand how climate works anyway, I'm taking my best shot. What do you think about that, Goose?
You're a hero.
Yeah. All right. So I get into the main topic. Are we responsible for our votes? Like I said, this is going to tick a lot of people off, depending on who listens to it. And I'm going to be focusing on my people, Jewish people. The reason is because historically, Jewish people do not vote in their best interest. Black people have a similar problem, but I hold Jewish people to a higher standard because according to our religion, we're supposed to hold ourselves to a higher standard. We're supposed to be the example for the world according to the Torah, because we are the quote-unquote chosen people. We're supposed to hold ourselves to a higher standard. And I do. I hold myself to a higher standard. I don't always meet that standard. I don't know anyone who does. But, you know, in the events of the recent few weeks with the Hamas-Israeli war really starts to exemplify the problem with Jewish people and the way we vote. 80% of us voted for Joe Biden. And I'm going to go through why that's a problem. And it really goes to previous, when you listen to previous episodes, you know, you start to understand why people don't know what's going on, because people don't seek the truth. And it's no different with Jewish people. We don't seek the truth. And it's really disturbing. I mean, the Hamas-Israeli war has exposed anti-Israel protests, more anti-Semitism in the United States, anti-Semitism in Congress, which has existed for quite a long time, most of which, or almost all of which I've seen at this point, is on the Democrat side, not the Republican side. But yet, we should be smarter than the way we vote. Because Jewish people are anomalously accomplished academically. You look at the number of Nobel Prizes, and I think I did a count of how many Nobel Prizes were awarded to Jewish people, but it's anomalously high compared to our population. There's a TV commercial right now stating that Jewish people are 2.4% of the population. I thought it was a little higher than that. But so I'll take this commercial's word for it, that we're 2.4% of the population. But academically, we tend to be very accomplished. So we should know better, right? No, because intelligence is not a point. Intelligence is a spectrum. And there's always a tendency to, for the more academically accomplished a person is, the more arrogance sets in and the more common sense is lost. I'm going to use Alan Dershowitz as an example. Now, for those of you who listen to the podcast know that I always refer to Alan Dershowitz along with Jonathan Turley as good sources for interpretations of the Constitution. I've been listening to a lot of talking heads on the Constitution. Alan Dershowitz and Jonathan Turley are some of the best that I've seen. And I've yet to see where Alan Dershowitz has been wrong. He's a Brooklyn College graduate, went to Yale Law, and he's a Harvard professor. I don't know if he's still doing that. But I wouldn't trust his opinion on anything else other than law. Because while he's great with the Constitution, probably great with law, when you look at some of his decision-making, it doesn't make sense. He himself has stated that he has been ostracized by his community in Martha's Vineyard for supporting Donald Trump. Now, he supports Donald Trump in his constitutional battles, not because he's a fan of Donald Trump. He doesn't necessarily like Donald Trump as a political leader. But he knows that his constitutional rights are being violated. He knows that, for example, his first impeachment was completely unconstitutional because they didn't charge him with a crime. They did not charge him with a crime. Yet on his own admission, he votes for Democrats. Why would you do that? Why would you do that? And that's typical. It's a typical problem with the Jewish community. Smart academically, but yet you can't put the whole story together to figure out what is true and what is not. My rabbi, Rabbi Jay Sherwood, in Temple Shalom, was in synagogue a couple of weeks ago, and this was just the day, I guess it was September 7th or so, I mean October 7th, when Hamas just attacked Israel. He had, in his sermon, he'd stated that the first person killed was a person that he met on one of his trips to Israel. And he starts saying how, you know, various countries and news outlets are starting to blame Israel for this. And he goes, well, we need to boycott those news outlets that are coming out against Israel. Really, Rabbi? Where the heck were you 20 years ago? This stuff's been going on forever. You're just figuring this out? you're just figuring this out? Of course he's just figuring this out, because he doesn't know fact from fiction on a regular basis. And this is a huge problem, and has been a huge problem with my people for 100 years, right? I've mentioned this before. I had seen film of Jewish people celebrating the communist takeover of Russia. And who were the first people persecuted by the communists? Jewish people. Who invented communism? A Jewish person, Karl Marx. Who was involved in the first Politburo after the Russian Revolution? Four out of the seven original members were Jewish. Kamenev, Sokolnikov, Trotsky, and Zinoviev. All right? You go to World War II. Three people that I know of, two are family members, one is the family member of someone else that I know. All three of these people survive. Leo Breitholtz, his mother put him on a train from Austria after the war broke out. He stayed on the run. He was a train jumper. He was actually on a prison train. He jumped the train, and he escaped from a prison or jail, and a French nun saved his life because he came down with appendicitis. He was in a hospital. Nazis came into the hospital and was asking if this guy was Jewish, and the nun said no, and they left him alone. He actually, many years later, went back to France to thank that nun. Bill Galland was in his early 20s, 1936, Berlin. His father sent Bill and two of his brothers out of the country to go set up businesses elsewhere. Bill ended up in India, and where he met his wife, Rachel. Al Sharon, his father, when the Nazis invaded Belgium, knew right away that this was a war on Jews, and they were out to kill them all, and had his family on the run for 4 years, finally ending up in Italy. The things that these people had in common is their family members paid attention. Bill Gallen told my youngest son that most of the people did not believe Hitler was going to follow through with his threats to kill Jews, because Hitler telegraphed this pretty clearly. Why would you not take that seriously? Why wouldn't you? Well, those people who didn't take it seriously died. You know, those people, not everyone who took it seriously could get out, and I'm sure some of those people were killed too. Al Sharon in Belgium, anyone in his family, extended family, who didn't leave or went back too early, went back to Brussels too early, they were killed. You need to open your eyes. It's amazing to me how people could not have taken Hitler seriously. It's amazing. But we have a trend of doing this, and we're doing it right now. We're doing it right now. So what does it mean when 80% of Jewish people voted Democrat? What does this mean? Well, here are the events that occurred that have led to where we are right now. First of all, Biden's horrendous retreat from Afghanistan. Right. If there's anyone who thinks that the retreat from Afghanistan went well, you may as well just turn off this podcast, because you're just not living in this world. Biden, according to a CNBC article on February 17th, 2021, Biden snubbed the Saudi crown prince. This is Mohammed bin Salman. And why is that important? I'll explain. While Biden was running for president, he called Saudi Arabia a pariah regime. This is according to an NPR article dated June 9th, 2022. Why is Saudi Arabia important? Okay. Because, number one, Biden had a problem with Saudi Arabia because of killing the reporter Khashoggi. Yeah, that wasn't a great thing. And no one can say it was. But you go ahead and you rub shoulders with Iran. really? Like, Iran hasn't killed people? Iran killed 326 protesters in 2022, according to a CNN article on November 12, 2022. And this was because the morality police killed this Kurdish woman, I think, for not wearing the burqa or not wearing the proper garments. Killed 326 protesters. And we're gonna do business with Iran? Are you kidding me? According to an ABC News article, according to an ABC News article on December 8th, 2021, okay, this is a few months before Russia invaded Ukraine. Biden threatens severe consequences if Russia invades. Ooh. Obviously, Russia didn't take that seriously, right? Obviously, Russia didn't take that seriously. Biden also continued Obama's appeasement of Iran, giving it $6 billion for prisoners after Obama gave Iran $150 billion. And what happens pretty soon after they get the $6 billion, although supposedly they haven't received any of that money yet, here goes Hamas attacking Israel in a huge, I mean, this was a huge, brutal, savage attack. And it's not like they were going after armed people. They were just killing civilians. They were just killing civilians. It was genetic cleansing, is what it was. You know, beheading babies, throwing babies in trucks and lighting them on fire. Really? Raping women, killing whole families, throwing grenades in their house, lighting their houses on fire when they run out, shooting them down. All right, this wasn't a war. This was just genetic cleansing. And yet, Biden promises $100 million to Gaza. That's according to whitehouse.gov's website, October 8th, 2023. So the reason why Saudi Arabia is so important is because Trump was making great progress in Mideast peace with the Abraham Accords. And the Saudis were starting to talk to the Israelis about peace. Do you have any idea what a game changer, what a geopolitical earthquake that would be if Israel and Saudi Arabia signed a peace treaty? Peace deal. And it was going that way. But Joe Biden torched it. He torched it by insulting Saudi Arabia, snubbing the crown prince, with resulting, of course, the Saudis, you know, cut production, resulting in oil price spikes. So you got to wonder, why is Joe Biden and why are Democrats siding with Iran? And why are Jewish people voting for a man who sides with Iran, who constantly threatens to destroy Israel and funds the terrorist organizations that are attacking Israel? Why would we do that? It's pretty amazing. So what does this all mean? You know, kind of going through what Jewish Americans should know. Well, first of all, as I said before, 80% of all Jewish Americans voted for Biden. Jewish Americans knew that Biden was going to seek to rejuvenate a treaty with Iran. Why? Why would he do that? Jewish Americans knew that Iran sponsors Hamas and Hezbollah. This is no secret. Jewish Americans knew that Biden insulted Saudi Arabia. Jewish Americans knew that Trump loved Israel. His daughter Ivanka is Jewish. Trump declared Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Trump opened a U.S. embassy in Jerusalem. No one else did that. No Democrat did that. Oh, as a matter of fact, no Republican did that either. But no Democrat did that. Why would we vote for Biden? Jewish Americans knew that Trump was making huge strides in the Middle East through the Abraham Accords. There were Israel signed treaties with United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Sudan, and Morocco. And we were really getting close. We were really getting close to making progress towards a Saudi-Israeli agreement. Again, I don't think there's anyone in the world that can say that that wouldn't be a huge game changer. Because now you have if that was to happen, you have a very powerful bloc against Iran. The Saudis have a good army. The Israelis have a great army. And they would rally the other anti-Iran nations like Jordan, Egypt. They would all rally around the Saudis and the Israelis. But Biden torched it. He torched it. And by continuing to appease Iran, Jewish Americans placed Israel in the crosshairs of Iran. Jewish Americans voted for the guy who continues to appease a country that's seeking to destroy Israel. Why would we do that? You got to ask yourselves, are Jewish Americans responsible for the Hamas-Israeli war? Now, I'm going to say the short answer, yes. But that doesn't mean I'm going to, you know, isolate myself from any of my family and friends that voted for Biden, which most of them did. But people need to understand that when you vote for someone, you take responsibility for what they do unless the politician commits fraud, which does happen. I mean, some people actually believed when Obama was talking about Obamacare that if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. If you like your insurance, you can keep your insurance. You know, I never believed it, but some people did, and he clearly lied. And politicians do that. Politicians lie. That's not unique to a Democrat or a Republican. They lie. But we are putting ourselves in a very bad situation, and we are not on the right side of history here. And all the warning signs are there. There have been anti-Semitic members of Congress forever. And the entire squad, right now there's eight, but the original four were certainly anti-Semitic. That's Omar, AOC, Presley, and Tlaib. They are vehemently anti-Semitic. They actually got the Democrats to cut funding for the Iron Dome weapon system in 2021, according to a New York Post article dated September 22nd, 2021. Bernie Sanders, he's Jewish, and he was raised in Brooklyn, New York. But he's always been an anti-Semite. He's always been anti-Israel and an anti-Semite. And let me tell you, he's not the only one. He stated Israel's siege of Gaza is a serious violation of international law. That's according to a Politico article dated October 11th, 2023. I didn't hear a peep out of him when Israeli babies were being beheaded. Didn't hear a peep out of him. Maybe he said something, I didn't see it. But these people aren't being punished by the Jewish member, by the Democrats anyway. I mean, you'd figure at some point, and the squad has made other anti-Israel statements. Ilhan Omar made something that some idiotic statement that she had to walk back. But the Jewish members of Congress, I mean, they're making comments, but this should be infuriating to the Jewish members, or at least of the Democrat Party. It should be infuriating. But they're not making any strong statements. Probably one of the strongest statements I made was from Lindsey Graham, senator from South Carolina, giving it to the anti-Semites in Congress. We need to be smarter. But probably one of the most disturbing things. Now, there's a vehement anti-Semite living in my neighborhood. Her name is Takira. She puts up big poster boards and writing all kinds of rants on them and attaches them, staples them to her mailbox post. And the latest one, two summers ago, summer of 2022, I actually confronted her on something. I knocked on her door. We had a polite conversation, but I knew she was a whack job when she made the statement that the Israeli Defense Force bombs its own people as a pretext for war. No, that's what Hamas does. That's what all the terrorist groups do. How do we know? Well, Islamic Jihad just rocketed a hospital in Gaza. Did they do it on purpose? I don't know. But they just killed 500 people in a hospital. The Israelis have a recording that of two Hamas members talking, saying that was one of their rockets. But yet the world, of course, wants to blame Israel. Hamas is using human shields. The Israelis have warned Gazan citizens to move out of northern Gaza. Gave them 24 hours, but that was probably like 4 days ago. And Hamas is seizing car keys. They're putting up roadblocks. They don't want the people to go because they want them to be killed. But yet, this whack job, Takira, in my neighborhood, she says the IDF is bombing their own people as a pretext. It's also what the Russians do, by the way. And of course, Russians have been committing horrible atrocities in Ukraine, but, you know, that doesn't get any attention anymore. One of the biggest disturbing events is a group called Not In Our Name. And there's a story in the New Republic dated October 18th, 2023. So this group, Not In Our Name, is a group of Jewish people who are supporting Hamas. They had a demonstration in the Capitol supporting Hamas, criticizing Israel, and these are Jewish people. Now, I find that pretty sickening myself. But who raised these kids to think like this? Who raised these kids? And let me tell you, this has been going on a long time. I had a conversation with my previous rabbi, Rabbi Susan Grossman, Beth Shalom congregation in Columbia, Maryland. And I went to her, I scheduled an appointment because I wanted to talk to her about the trouble that Jewish people are going to get themselves into. We had about an hour conversation. She said the thing that really keeps her awake is the number of Jewish people who are starting to criticize Israel for how they're handling the Palestinians. But yet she herself, being extraordinarily liberal, doesn't even take responsibility. It's her and people like her that have created this environment and have raised kids to hate Israel. My kids don't hate Israel. I didn't raise them that way. And quite frankly, if one of my kids was in this not in our name group, I would disown them. They'd be out of the will. I'd take all the stuff in, that's in my house. I'd toss it out. And they'd be dead to me. And I think they know that. But 80% of us, 80% of us who are voting Democrat, we have our heads in the sand. Our heads are buried in the sand. We're not looking. And it's going to come back to bite us. It's going to come back to bite us. And here's the most interesting part. So with all the anti-Israel protests on college campuses, in cities, and there is a rise in anti-Semitism in the United States, you have that, and then juxtaposed to that is the fact that the 80%ers don't even like the Second Amendment. They don't even want to defend themselves. I have two rifles and a pistol. I can pick anybody off at 300 yards if they try to come after me, and I will. And if someone busts my house, my wife will shoot them dead before I can get to my rifle. So, I mean, they're anti-Second Amendment. Jewish people are creating an environment for themselves that is detrimental, and at the same time, not utilizing their rights to defend themselves because they don't believe in the Second Amendment. They don't believe people should own guns. I've said this before in one of my previous episodes. Dr. Ben Carson, in his 2016 presidential campaign, said if Jewish people had guns in Germany, the Holocaust either wouldn't have happened or they wouldn't have lost as many people as they would have. And that is absolutely true. And I know it's true because what people don't realize that there were Jewish people living in Israel before 1948, before World War II, and before Israel declared independence. Not all the Jews were evicted from Israel after the Roman conquest and the destruction of the Second Temple in 70 AD. Starting from around 1920, to 1948, there's a group called Haganah. The Haganah was a Jewish paramilitary defense force because there were tensions and serious tensions between the Palestinians and the Jewish people. And they had to defend themselves, and they did. They had to defend themselves. Jewish people now in Israel own guns. But yet Jewish people in America, what? Why should I own a gun? Why should people have the right to own guns? It's not a good situation. And our votes come with a responsibility. You know, if I make a mistake in voting, I'd be more than happy to admit it. Because once you admit it, then you're less likely to make the mistake again. I stopped voting, for example, I stopped voting Republican in 1992 because I was not going to vote for people who wanted to teach creationism in public school. You want to teach creationism, then you teach it in religious school. I'm not going to vote for people who want that. Also, I wasn't enjoying the fact that abortion doctors were being killed and all kinds of other issues with protests and abortion clinics. I didn't like that look. So I stopped voting Republican until 2008. And, of course, I won't be voting Democrat ever again, at least not in the near future. But I took responsibility for my vote. So, anyway, you know what we're going to get to now? We're going to get to the good news section of our podcast. Because you know what? You can't keep going down the rabbit hole of negativity. You can't. It's not good. It's not healthy. When people are very negative on Moss, bad things happen. When people think that the world's coming to an end, they start making bad decisions. So we're gonna talk about the good news here. So, West Virginia high schoolers band together to keep the music going. Pocahontas County High School band has just 10 members. But what happened was, at some point, their band leader retired, and they were given the choice, and they couldn't find a replacement for the band director. So the principal said, you can either teach yourselves or you can do another class during fifth period. And what did they do? They stepped up. They stepped up, and they kept the band going. Now, mind you, I had a jazz rock band in Maryland that had 15 members, which was 50% more than the Pocahontas County High School band. Hey, Goose, what do you think of a band with 10 members?
I think it would suck if they were all drummers.
Let's hope they weren't. I mean, you can get a lot of sound out of a 10-piece band, but I'm just pointing out that I had 15 pieces, so. All right. Hey, a team of 22 students at Eindhoven University of Technology in the Netherlands developed an off-road solar-powered SUV. It's pretty impressive. I don't really care, but it's pretty impressive. Let's keep going. There's a first-of-its-kind bionic prosthesis that has proved life-changing for a Swedish engineer named Karen. 20 years ago, Karen lost her arm below the elbow in a farm equipment accident. I got to tell you, people do not understand the dangers of farming or mining. But, you know, if you're not careful, if you're not watching what you're doing, you really... And actually, if you're wearing loose clothing that gets caught in the wrong part of a combine, you are not going to be feeling good. So where are we going? Oh, yeah. So she did not use a prosthesis until now, when she was fitted with an arm using osseointegration, a process where bone tissue and titanium come together, creating a strong mechanical bond, enabling connection with the nervous system. That is really interesting. Through electrodes in the nerves and muscles. So this person has been fitted with, I guess, what can be considered the first bionic arm. Good for her. Sorry about the losing the arm, but good for her. Hey, a Chicago marathon runner rescues a kitten during the race. I wonder if this person won the race. Sarah Bohan was on mile 21 of the Chicago Marathon last week, and this is actually last, I guess, during the week of October. What is today's date? Today is the 19th. So that would be like during the week of October 12th. When she saw out of the corner of her eye a kitten under a pile of leaves, Bohan was on track to setting a personal record, but she was also running on Team Paws Chicago, PAWS Chicago, to benefit the animal welfare organization, and knew she couldn't leave the cat behind. She asked multiple people along the course if they'd take him, and after a mile, she met the kitten's match, Andrea Maldonado. Her family has two cats and a dog already, Maldonado told Insider, but she welcomed the new addition because the more the merrier. The kitten, now named Casper, received a clean bill of health and has settled right in with the Maldonados. Good job affecting your race to save a kitten. Let's see. I think that's probably all the good news we have. Oh, wait. Let's go back another week or so and see what good news happens during, like, the week of October 5th, something like that. Let's see. Wildlife is returning to the island of Redonda. Redonda has come back to life. The uninhabited island is part of Antigua and Barbuda And last month, the government established the Redonda Ecosystem Reserve, covering 74,000 acres of land. In the 19th century, Redonda was home to wildlife like iguanas and birds. Colonists then arrived to mine guano for use in fertilizers and gunpowder. Wow. Why do you need to mine guano? Can't you just get a bunch of bats and birds, put them somewhere, and just let them dump for about a couple of years? Bringing with them goats that ate vegetation and rats that ate reptiles and bird eggs. The island became nearly barren, and wanting to revive it, environmental groups came together in 2016 to relocate goats and eradicate rats. It took 2 years, and almost immediately vegetation began growing, land birds returned, and the Redonda ground dragon population increased. Wow. I wonder what it's like to be a ground dragon. That's got to be pretty cool. Jack, here's one. Town unites to help boy find a missing Lego. I don't even want to read the story. That headline is just too funny.
Next.
Wait, no, hold on a second. Jack Steele figured it was worth a shot to put up a missing person poster for his lost Lego. And his instinct was correct. A 10-year-old from Ulverston, England, made a Lego figure over the summer that looked just like him and carried it everywhere. When he realized it fell out of his backpack and was nowhere to be found, he created a poster with a drawing and a description of the Lego. So this story is actually misleading because when someone says they're missing a Lego, I'm figuring just one piece. Isn't that right, Goose?
As an avid Lego user in my childhood, I would consider a minifigure to be one Lego.
A minifigure would be one Lego?
Yeah.
All right.
Let the man live. He's in the right.
All right. And so he created a poster with a drawing and description of the Lego, put it on a pole along his route to school. His mom, Lorna Walker, shared an image of the poster on her Facebook page. And neighbors started searching for the figure. It was found by a teenager whose mother saw Walker's poster. Steele had offered a reward of £2, or $2.50, but instead bought the teen a box of chocolates. I think I would have rather had the money. A grateful Steele told the Washington Post it meant a lot to him. When all the people saw the poster, they wanted to help. Why would the Washington Post be reporting on a Lego story? All right, I'm going to read one more. I think this one's pretty funny. The Guinea worm is nearly eradicated. The Carter Center is just 6 cases away from reaching its goal of eradicating Guinea worm. Former President Jimmy Carter and former First Lady Rosalind Carter founded the Carter Center in 1982 and the eradication program in 1985, when there were about 3.5 million guinea worm cases. All right. I was thinking this wasn't really an infection thing. I was just thinking they were trying to get rid of the worms. As of this month, there are just 6 human cases worldwide. People typically get the disease by consuming water fleas found in contaminated water. The Carter Center has funded projects to distribute filters able to... What? Did you just cut me off?
Forgot to mute that about 53 minutes and 58 seconds ago.
So. Did you just cut me off? I just got cut off. Hold on, I'm almost done. The Carter Center has funded projects to distribute filters able to remove larvae from water and educates people on prevention. Yeah, that's a good story. So, all right, I'm done with the good news. What do you think, Goose? Wrap it up?
Good news is boring. Negativity sells.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that affirmation of my efforts here.
Yeah, you should make negativity sells like merchandise and then donate it to promoting more negativity.
Wait, isn't that what social media does without me?
Yeah, but you could be a catalyst and a cog in the machine, you know?
As appealing as that sounds, I just don't really think I want to do that.
Fair enough. More for me.
All right. All right, well, are you going to start the bumper music to end this there, or should I just go ahead and say adieu now?
You can just say it. It's ruined. I can kind of try. I bid thee adieu.
All right, kids. Thank you very much for listening. And I bid you all a fond adieu.